You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
We had a lot of news over the weekend, but no piece of news bigger than the one we got this morning, which is that Judge Sue L. Robinson has decided to recommend 6 games for Deshaun Watson's suspension. Of course, she is the neutral, independent arbitrator hired by the NFL for cases such as this, although it was very unique. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant with you on a Monday. Sean Mapes, the best behind the glass as always. Guys, initial reaction, 6 games. Now, of course, this is not final. The NFL could still push for more. Roger Goodell and his cronies have the final say, but 6 games. When you hear this, what was your initial impression?
I mean, it's not enough, just based off of everything I've read, all those disgusting details from the allegations against him. I guess I'm now at the point of, well, isn't it resolved, though, if all but one of the people that have filed civil suits against Deshaun Watson have come to an agreement? And what am I really looking for at this point? You know, am I rooting for a suspension? Am I rooting for a fine? I mean, people are going to forget about this and he's going to be back on the field playing again and we're just going to move on until the next player in the NFL does this. And I hate to sound jaded and nihilistic and stuff, but I don't know. I guess I'm sort of at the point now, not where I'm like discouraged. I'm just like, I kind of expected it to be an underwhelming suspension. And I am kind of wondering to myself, should I be angry about this? He already kind of escaped justice given the fact that there wasn't enough evidence to criminally prosecute him when it seems like there were some criminal things that were done. So, I mean, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to feel?
Your mixed emotions echo that of a lot of people where it's like, what else can you do? They don't have any hard evidence against him.
Right.
I'm sorry, they just don't. Like, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not saying it did. I'm just
saying.
It's
hard to believe it didn't happen when there's that many accounts that are similar. But
correct,
you're right.
But there is technically no concrete video camera footage that this actually happened. So it's a really rough situation. At the same time, the NFL is in a position where they have mishandled cases that involve domestic violence, women in general in the NFL. Here's ESPN's Adam Schefter, who offered a little bit of insight into the thought process behind this decision and, more importantly, kind of what happens next.
Moments ago, Greeny Sue L. Robinson, the retired federal judge, handed down her decision, and Deshaun Watson has been suspended for 6 games. Obviously, she ruled that he violated the personal conduct policy. She will not fine him in this particular case. The NFLPA has said it will not appeal the decision. It looked for a suspension even lighter than this. The question now will be whether or not the NFL seeks to appeal this decision, which would go to either NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell or his designee. My sense is right now, we'll see what the league decides to do.
Yeah, we will see. I mean, you saw the NFLPA tweet out last night that they would not be making any appeals, indicating that they probably knew that it was going to be the 6-game suspension. The NFLPA called on the NFL to do the same. I thought Albert Breer brought up a good point on Twitter of the fact that from an optics standpoint, is the NFL going to push back on this and kind of quote-unquote undermine the neutral arbitrator that they put in place in order to take some of the pressure off of Roger Goodell? To me, it's very circuitous, right? Because they bring in a neutral arbitrator to avoid all of the pressure being on Roger Goodell, but then Roger Goodell ultimately has the final say. So, Sean, you brought up a really good point earlier about how this could almost work in the NFL's benefit and make them look good.
Yeah, because so often, basically since Goodell came into power, really start cracking down on guys that the suspension wouldn't really fit the crime in the public eye. Think about Ray Rice getting suspended
right.
2 games with the video of him hitting his girlfriend at the time. And then everyone got outraged, and then they tried to suspend him indefinitely, and the NFLPA rightly was like, whoa, you can't suspend him again just because people were upset at you. Now,
right.
This feels like it's a workaround where they can have someone else give out, hey, 6 games, and then they could sit, you know, kind of put their finger in the bathwater, see how people are taking it, and then they can bump it up. Like, I feel like they will, considering that they were pushing apparently for an indefinite or at least a year and fines, where now we're at 6 and no fines. So I think it is a genius way to get some good PR from the NFL off of like a awful situation.
Let's look at the Browns' schedule, guys. We've dissected a lot of this, but there is the football aspect to it. We're sensitive to what really matters here, but there is the football aspect too. So Jacoby Brissett is expected to be the Browns' starting quarterback. And if Deshaun Watson misses only six games, that's if, the first game he would be back would be October 23rd, the Browns at the Ravens. That means that he would miss the first six games, of course. But the first six games, guys, Panthers, Jets, Steelers, Falcons, Chargers, Patriots. I'm not saying Jacoby Brissett could go 6-0. I'm just saying it's not the hardest schedule I've ever seen for the first six games.
It's not. That team has talent. Their defense is very good. They have Myles Garrett. They brought back Jadeveon Clowney. I like what Cleveland's put together on that side of the ball. I think offensively, too. I mean, you got Nick Chubb. You got Kareem Hunt. You know, this is a team that can definitely tread through six games without
him. 100%. They are definitely a complete team. And if it is only six games, to your point, Paul Gallant, let's say that I almost said Jeremy Branham. Congrats, you're the quarterback of the Browns. Jacoby Brissett can win four out of these six games, right?
Right.
And then Deshaun Watson comes in. And it's from there, it's Ravens, Browns, Dolphins, Bills, Bucks, Texans, Bengals. It heats up a little bit, right? But it's still not the hardest schedule in the NFL.
That division isn't what it used to be. I mean, Pittsburgh's defense is good, but as far as what they're going to be able to score this year, not so much. And then after that, it's really like I'm really intrigued to see like Baltimore or Cleveland down the stretch. If they have a big game between the two at the end of the year.
3 days the NFL has to decide if they would like to appeal this, tack on some more suspended games, etc. The fact that there's no fine getting a lot of attention as well. Let's go to Rick, who is on our hotline right now.
713-780-3776.
Rick, how you doing?
How you doing?
Yo.
Good. Hey.
I've been listening, and I love the show, but the courts have already said, or the arbitrator said, it should be. So we're going to let the court of public appeal put out his punishment as well?
Wait.
So are we going with the court or are we going with what the public wants?
Are you talking about an
public
actual
opinion.
Court?
No.
You mean public,
court
opinion.
Of public opinion?
Yeah. Well, we're just giving our opinion on it, but are you referencing Roger Goodell and his decision? You're saying that the court of
right,
public opinion shouldn't influence him?
Are we saying that how it looks in the public eye? If the court already said this is what it should be, but the public is offended by that or doesn't like it, so we should do what the public wants?
I mean, that's kind of what a sports league is all about. You know, I mean, shoot, Rick, like go back in time.
We're just throwing law out the window then, right?
Well, I mean,
this isn't about...
It's company law. It's not American law.
It's no longer about criminal law. Just to be clear, he was not indicted by two grand juries. Criminal charges dropped. There is nothing criminal about this.
This is
about
corporate
conduct
discipline.
Detrimental to the league.
Yeah.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley placing a parlay, that isn't illegal. It's illegal.
Correct.
According to his company.
Great point.
Rules.
And we do appreciate that call from Rick, by the way. We appreciate all our listeners. But yeah, this is, just to be clear, the criminal part of this seems to be over,
and,
right?
And let's not act like public opinion hasn't influenced stuff by the NFL in the past. Like, the Ray Rice video comes out. It was a two-game suspension before the video comes out. The video comes out. He's never played a down again.
Right.
You know, Josh Brown, I think the kicker for the New York Giants who had some allegations against him, I think he got suspended one game after the NFL put out a policy that it was going to be six games, and then all of a sudden there was an outcry, and then they changed that too. The NFL is very reactive and does like to stick its finger up in the air and see which way the wind blows. And I wonder how loud the reaction is to this right now outside of Houston. I think we're a little bit biased. I think we all want things to be as bad as possible for the Browns, partly because bleep Deshaun Watson, but also partly because it helps the Texans out from a draft perspective, right? But outside of here, are there going to be a lot of people that are going to be calling for Deshaun Watson? Or do not that many people know actually the specifics of the case? They see he didn't get charged criminally, and they think to themselves, well, I mean, what did they actually really have to go with against him? I can't speak for the rest of NFL fans.
I would imagine that the majority of people, though, that are fans, think that this is way too little.
Yep. And I said Dave Pasch earlier. It's Jeff Pasch. Dave Pasch is a sports commentator. Jeff Pasch is the top lawyer for the NFL. I think that's a name to watch. My understanding is he and Roger Goodell are going to be the ones that are kind of handling this if the NFL should decide to pursue more games. I definitely understand what caller Rick was saying. Optics probably shouldn't be a part of it, but guess what? They are. And they always have been, and they are more so now because, as Judy Batista said on NFL Network this morning, the NFL and the commissioner and the front office have gone through literal training, seminars,
yeah,
all of that to try to improve how they treat women.
It is funny, though, because, twitch.tv/ESPN975, Battery Chucker says, the NFL had owners on drugs and in massage parlors and did nothing.
Yep. I mean, that was one of the big arguments that the Players Association made, and is why they were hoping that there's going to be some sort of independent arbitration. I mean, Daniel Snyder's a bleeping embarrassment. He should be suspended for being embarrassing.
But it's one of those, like, multiple things can be true at one time. Like, should Deshaun get more than six games? Probably. But should owners be held more accountable? Absolutely.
But guess what? We live in a country where if you're rich, like, you're above the law. So.
Right.
I mean,
well, I mean, they're all rich, but the owners are rich.
But if you're really rich.
The owners are rich.
Well, if you're, I mean, yeah, Deshaun Watson also is not really facing that harshest of consequences for his actions.
Yeah.
And then also, yes, the billionaires, they're making their own rules so they don't have to get in trouble.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
They're not going to get each other in trouble.
One of the most underrated things that people probably aren't talking about enough
those jeans,
is
said Jerry Richardson.
The fact that
before he got fired, wiggling them for me.
Oh yeah, Jeans Friday.
Yeah.
The fact that Roger Goodell would be coming at one of his own bosses if he decides to tack on more games. I mean, all of the owners, you have to think they're texting Roger Goodell right now with their opinion. They are his bosses, so we'll see what.
What's Roger Goodell's response? Like, I am human. Right. I will take care of what you tell me to
do. Remember the
it's
only...
just the thumbs up emoji
right.
every time.
The only
ha ha, come on. Come on, guys. Come on. It is me, Roger Goodell.
Nice to hear from you, period. I remember people saying the only time he seemed human
look
was
at
when
my
his
couch.
Zoom... The only time his Zoom was going out during the virtual NFL draft.
Look at my recliner. I am definitely like every American in the United States of America. Ha ha, see me with my beer. Hello, it is I, Roger Goodell.
Yep.
Okay, I'll stop.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Coming up from Nathan Gallant, more from Robot Roger Goodell. We are going to talk about the Astros taking this series against Seattle, but obviously the discussion with Deshaun Watson will continue. But first, Paul is going to tell you about his friends at PIN.
Yes, the Passive Investor Network, baby. Look, if you want to make money through real estate investment, how are you going to do it? Well, you want to have people in your corner who know what they are doing. Because you might know a thing or two about real estate, but I mean, don't you want people that have been doing it for 20 years that have known the city of Houston like the back of their hand, that have been doing work in the city of Houston for 20 plus years? And that's what my friends at the Passive Investor Network can do with you. They sit down with you and they personalize a five-year plan for you. Because you might be thinking to yourself, damn, I don't even know if I have that much money to put into investing. You know, I don't have that much. I got a little bit. They're going to help you find a way to turn that little bit into a lot. They got people all over the town that look for the best parts of town to flip and turn into beautiful looking spots. Then you get those money back through your real estate investment. You want to go on their bus tour to see what they're all about. PassiveInvestor.net, promo code ESPN. Again, it's PassiveInvestor.net.com/ESPN. If you want people in your corner as you invest in real estate, the Passive Investor Network, they are your go-to. PassiveInvestor.net, promo code ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
I got to say, Paul, your side chick is aggressive.
Oh, yeah. She bites a lot,
huh? Yeah, that's why you like her.
Yeah,
the Astros taking 3-4 from the Mariners this weekend, of course, thanks to that walk-off by Yordan last night. The Astros looked good. Odorizzi, 7-inning shutout. The bullpen was a little dicey, which is why Yordan needed that walk-off to win in the first place. But overall, a good series for the Astros, a good bounce back after that very, very strange getting swept in Oakland ordeal.
Yeah, I mean, they won six of seven against a team that had won 14 games in a row going into the first series. You sweep them in Seattle. You almost swept them this past weekend. Saturday is a bit frustrating. And look, this series was a lot closer than I think the obviously final result would indicate. And they did win that game on Saturday. But, I mean, look, the Mariners are a tough team. I think they merit respect. They're not a team that I would enjoy playing again in the playoffs, given they've had 19 games of experience against the Astros this year and clearly are not scared of them in any way, shape, or form. As far as from the Astros side of things, I mean, the big players, whether it was Alex Bregman or it was Yordan Alvarez or it was Jose Altuve, like the guys who you expect to come up big in big moments all had their own moments over the course of the weekend, and you love to see that. I don't think right now, outside of Yuli, that anyone you could point at and say, oh, this is not going so well. And I'll even say, too, like moving Yuli to the two spot in the lineup, maybe that helps out. It was interesting to see how feisty things got, though, Vanessa, to go back.
Feisty's a great word for it.
Yeah, to go back to what you were saying. You know, I remember, I think it was on Thursday, when Yuli got hit by Munoz, and then Munoz, like, drop-kicked Alex Bregman in the leg when he was sliding into home plate. I thought for sure that we would see some sort of brawl during the weekend. And yesterday, I mean, the game opens up and you have this sequence, which is narrated here by Todd Callis and Jeff Blum.
Lineup, you're going to see these guys talking to each other, maybe even Altuve mentioning something if he has a chance to.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Hey, that, you know what? There is a history on that Seattle side, and it starts at the top. They've already had issues with the Los Angeles Angels. Your young pitcher, yeah.
In Elon, when he was at Elon College.
Hey, man,
that's a breaking ball. The fans are getting really riled up right now.
Yeah, that's not going to help the cause at all, because the fans are booing, too, because they understand the reputation the Mariners have.
And this is why, by the way, Jeff Blum is one of the best color commentators in the game, because he's saying things that some people would consider walking a line, but honestly, after all the flack that Astros fans have gotten with the scandal and all of that, he's saying things that Astros fans want to hear and things that are true.
Seattle people were getting very mad about that accusation.
Yeah, it went viral.
I'm sorry. I don't see how you get mad, and I am biased on that front, but I don't see how you can defend yourself at all. You've gotten two national stories for getting in brawls over the last like month. One was against the Astros, where at least benches cleared, and then against the Angels. I mean, you like got into like a Donnybrook. You know, I mean, it was still, both teams were fighting in that one. It looked like a Civil War battlefield, and you're like dragging it into dugouts and stuff. They do have a reputation, and people were bringing up, well, actually, the Astros hit more Mariners this year. So I decided to go back through the whole thing, Vanessa, just to check.
Ooh, Pauly G did some research.
Just to check for sure. So the Astros did hit Ty France, who gets hit by everybody, by the way. Like, he's the most hit batter in baseball, I think, the last couple of years.
It's his attitude.
No, he just, it's his, he's like Craig Biggio. Like, he just leans into it, you know? Like, some guys, they lean into it, and then they get a big elbow brace, and they kind of put it almost in the strike zone. So it was him. It was Dylan Moore in the top of the first. So today, on Sunday, is it that surprising that in the top of the first, Altuve and Yuli almost get hit? Like, that probably was retaliatory. Tucker almost got drilled, by the way, later on in the seventh inning on Saturday. I feel like, you know, with Arcel Martin Maldonado getting hit by a pitch Friday after a Mauricio Dubon home run, like, the Mariners did enough stuff this weekend to say that, yeah, they were perhaps throwing at the Astros. And I don't think the umpires did a very good job of keeping that in check. You know, like, a three-run homer just happened. You hit the next batter. We're really supposed to think, like, that wasn't a hit batter out of frustration when there's nobody on base and the game's not over. To open up the game, you're throwing at Altuve and then throwing at Gurriel. Like, I know Julio Rodriguez, I guess, told Yordan Alvarez that there was nothing to it. But we have Jake Odorizzi, right, Sean? Jake Odorizzi was asked about it. And, you know, I know there's not a lot of Jake fans out there, but I felt like his assessment of things was pretty accurate.
I was underneath. I didn't really see it happen. I, from the commotion I heard, yeah. It didn't seem like it was a well-located pitch. Yeah, whatever. Most important thing is winning, and that's what we're able to do.
Very tactful. Look, I don't know why Mariners are so sensitive about it. I don't know why Mariners fans are so sensitive about it. I mean, your actions speak for themselves, and sure, the Astros have hit more Mariners than the Mariners have hit Astros this year, but I mean, of late, I feel like the Mariners are acting like a bunch of moody teenagers.
And why not just own it? Why not just own the fact that it's happening?
And as far as Mariners fans go on Twitter, because they are some of the chirpiest fans.
Very chirpy.
Of anyone. And my whole thing is, hey, guys, you haven't made the playoffs in 20 years. You're going to make the playoffs this year. It's the best season you've had in two decades. Have a little fun with it.
But I'll push back on that from this perspective. You don't want to like your division rivals.
No, but they're coming at everyone's neck all the time. I just thought they have a more sunny disposition about the entire
thing. They live in Seattle.
Is that just a thing that they have?
But isn't the weather nice during the summer?
Yeah, but like it's
like
2 months.
Like I've heard it's gorgeous.
And now they're flexing because they won
14
games in a row.
So they're Nirvana like year round.
Look, I can't. I think right
Rest
now.
Rest in peace, Kurt Cobain.
I just want everyone to be friends, you know? Like I want everyone to like each other. I realize that is a hopeless gesture that I am caught in the middle of this. But I think that Seattle fans are acting pretty stupid when it comes to like this idea that like, oh, there's not a reputation. There is a reputation. Come on. Like, and then they went back in time. They said, yeah, well, one time there was a fan in the stands at Minute Maid Park who said, yeah, hit J.P. Crawford. And it's like, okay, but we're talking about you and your actions. We're not talking about some drunk guy, of which you have plenty of drunks
right.
at your stadium,
people
too.
People bringing fans into player issues yeah. is strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul, do you find yourself often in this situation? It's a very interesting situation between the Mariners and the Astros where it is kind of like you're trying to get like one friend and another friend that you have to like each other even though they like don't like
right.
each other
and
at all.
And we've all had that, by the
or,
way.
Or like
and
your
it's
ex-girlfriend and your girlfriend to be friends. And like
he's probably had that too.
I want everyone, no comment. I want everyone to get along in this. I do. I realize it's not going to happen. I also think like, having a little perspective on both sides of it, I feel like I can be pretty objective with things. And I think that, yeah, I think that the Mariners fans getting sensitive about that. Like, no, I'm sorry. Like, this weekend spoke for itself. You guys were throwing at the Astros. Come on. And you didn't get punished for it either, right. Which that surprised me too. I think the umpires did a really poor job here. There's clearly a track record here. It's less than a month old. What was it, like July 3rd when they were wearing the Space City uniforms and things got all escalated.
Yep.
Right, where Scott Service is yapping out of the dugout. Like I don't get why no one stepped in here. Like this was a powder keg. It's two teams that like are the only two good teams in their division that have played each other basically like seven times in 10 games.
I like it. Bring it on. Let's brawl. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Some bitter Titans fans come at Paul. We read some of the mean tweets, plus tackling the issue of race and quarterback, how it relates to Deshaun Watson, and the comment from Patrick Mahomes regarding Lamar Jackson. That's coming up.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
The issue of race among quarterbacks is a hot topic. It's evolved. One of the guys who's a pioneer of that, you know, Warren Moon here, who played here in Houston for the Oilers. There's always been more criticism, it seems, involved with black quarterbacks. And some folks think that that has not changed.
It goes back a ways.
Right.
I mean, there was a time where coaches believed that a black man couldn't play, which is just so stupid.
And it
wasn't
that long ago, like we were
right.
talking about earlier. It seems like it was a long time ago, but it wasn't.
No, it was, I think Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick started it to normalize because they were both very talented and very good when they played in the NFL. But for a while, I mean, you would consistently see guys move to other positions,
right.
be backups. There would be politics in the side. Well, I can't even say politics,
but
right?
But there still
There's like
are,
a political
to your
dynamic
point.
To it. Right. Now I do think that we've finally gotten past that because we realized that was stupid.
I think that the narrative has gotten a lot better. The conversation has gotten a lot more open. But there are still some gray areas where people think that there's more criticism on black quarterbacks, be it Kyler Murray's contract, be it the way Lamar Jackson plays or the fact that people thought that he should just not be a quarterback to begin with. And Patrick Mahomes weighed in on the issues involving he and his fellow black quarterbacks last week.
I don't want to go that far and say that. I mean, obviously, the black quarterback has had a battle to be in this position that we are, to have this many guys in the league playing. And I think every day we're proving that we should have been playing the whole time. We've got guys that think just as well as they can use their athleticism. And so it always is weird when you see guys like me, Lamar, Kyler, kind of get that on them and other guys don't. But at the same time, we're going to go out there and prove ourselves every day to show that we can be some of the best quarterbacks in the league.
So when I first saw an aggregation, Vanessa, of this quote from Patrick Mahomes, I thought to myself, wait a second, who's criticizing Patrick Mahomes? Why is he inserting himself into this? But then I went back to the Mike Sando piece and I saw that one anonymous quote about Mahomes was, you take away his first read and he moves to street ball, which is poorly worded. Best.
Yes.
Especially in 2022. What, you think that people aren't going to hear what they want to hear with that, call that racially coded, et cetera, et cetera. And I would just say that anyone criticizing Patrick Mahomes, okay, you could criticize any quarterback. Like, you could bring up with Peyton Manning, we've talked about this before, Peyton Manning had happy feet. With Tom Brady, pressure up the middle, he's not great. And honestly, if you take a look at his playoff numbers are not, like, blowing you away good. So you can find a way to criticize every single quarterback if you want.
But the wording and the language matters.
It does. But I do want to go back, though, to, like, with Murray. Has any of the criticism this offseason for Kyler Murray been unfair?
It's been totally fair. In fact, there should have been more criticism, because the second that they took this additive out of his contract, the thing that I saw from all media members was either it's the Arizona front office's fault, ownership, or it's his agent's fault. I'm like, how about the guy that isn't studying and that's playing Call of Duty? So to your point, I think it's gotten a lot better. Warren Moon, somebody that played here in Houston, very familiar, former guest of Vanessa and Gallant, had thoughts on Kyler Murray's additive and how it affects black quarterback perception.
It's an embarrassing situation for not only the player Kyler Murray, but it's embarrassing for the organization to have to deal with this.
Yeah.
I think it shows a lack of trust in the player that you even have to put something in a contract like this. It also is a slap in the face to all African-American quarterbacks, because that's something we were always accused of back in the day when they didn't let us play, is that we were lazy, that we didn't study, that we couldn't be leaders, that we weren't smart. So all those different things just kind of came to the surface after we had put all that stuff to bed over the years, and just because of this deal that's gone on between Arizona and Kyler. So, yeah, very embarrassing.
I think Moon's perspective is one that should be listened to, just because Moon actually went through this
Absolutely.
Stuff.
In the thick of it.
And I think that because he went through it, he's always going to be sensitive to it when guys after him are going through it as well. The comments about Lamar Jackson, if he wins 12 MVPs, I wouldn't put him in tier one. Hyperbole, but the rest of the criticism of him by that defensive coordinator, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with. And with Murray did not seem engaged at the end of a playoff loss to the Los Angeles Rams, and did not take control of a team that, when it lost DeAndre Hopkins, needed somebody to step up. He didn't do it. So criticism of both of those two is 100% inbounds to me. Mahomes, stupid. Just don't, you know?
And the way Mahomes worded it made total sense, which is basically, it's a bummer that these narratives exist. We've had to work hard to be in these positions. He's correct. But Kyler Murray, doesn't matter if he's white, black, brown. If you are a quarterback in the NFL and you're not studying your playbook, you're going to be criticized.
Right. And you should be.
Absolutely. Booger McFarland just had a tweet that I thought played into this. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Sue L. Robinson, a white woman who is a former federal judge, who's used to high-profile cases and dealing with faceless facts, gave Deshaun Watson 6 games. I think that speaks volumes on so many levels. I don't think the NFL will appeal regardless of how upset they are.
Why does it speak volumes on so many levels?
I don't know, and it's one of those, like, why is race being brought into this particular thing with Watson?
A white woman.
Also, like, I can't tell if he's criticizing or not.
Correct.
I can't either.
The grammatic thing is just odd.
And he says it's interesting on so many levels. Well, what are the levels?
Yeah, it's like he felt the need to just tweet something.
Are you going to expand?
Is this meant for interpretation in English class?
We should always listen to people like Warren Moon that have been through these things. But I'm sorry. I think that Kyler Murray would be criticized regardless of race.
What ticks me off is there's always whataboutism when it comes to this. And people who are sensitive to a black quarterback being criticized will correctly bring up that there are other quarterbacks that you can also criticize who are worse than those quarterbacks. But they'll bring up guys like Daniel Jones. Who thinks Daniel Jones is even in the same realm as those two guys? You know, there's this, like, very clearly, Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson are in the, they're damn good, they can be great, they're not consistently great conversation. Anyone with a football-watching brain agrees on that. And the people that get mad about them being criticized are like, well, why aren't you criticizing this guy, this guy, or this guy? Well, because we don't care.
Right.
They don't play for teams that matter.
Right, correct.
And so that's why we talk about these guys all the time. We talk about the top 12. The guys that are out of the top 12, if you're not being talked about as a quarterback, it's because people think you suck. Like, that's
like,
we don't
talk about Sam Darnold's personal life.
Because he's
his
trash.
Because he's not good.
And
right.
He's getting mono all the time.
Speaking of trash.
Check that out just one time.
Speaking of trash, Titans fans.
Oh, God.
Had some fun with Pauly G over the weekend after Paul responded to an A.J. Brown tweet.
It was just last night. I mean, so A.J. Brown had tweeted out, oh, essentially saying DK got paid, Deebo Samuel got paid, Terry McLaurin got paid. Did Terry McLaurin get paid?
Yeah, McLaurin got a massive deal.
McLaurin got paid. And the one team that did not keep their wide receiver from that draft class who played very well and was probably worthy of a raise were, guess what? The poor-ass Tennessee Titans who traded him away to the Philadelphia Eagles. So I tweeted out in response to this just thinking, you know what? Whenever I have a chance to bring the fire to Tennessee Titans fans and remind them of the nothingness that they are, of the complete irrelevance, of the fact that the greatest moment in their franchise history is when they lost a Super Bowl by 1 yard, and the other greatest moments that could have been in their franchise's history where they had the one seed and then they lost in the first round of the playoffs three times, not once, not twice, three times, including last year. I tweeted, given the Titans are trying to get taxpayers to build them a new stadium, it's pretty clear they are poors. And it's really funny seeing people respond to this because they were getting very mad. I think some people were saying, like, Paul Gallant is clearly some woke leftist who works for ESPN. One person says, the stadium is going to turn Nashville into a top 5 city. If I was a taxpayer, I'd be thrilled. Every local bar, hotel, and business is going to explode. Yeah, you're going to see that. You're going to see those profits. What else do we have? Don't get mad. The Texans ain't going anywhere, except for when they play the Titans because they almost beat them twice this past season. Essentially, the people that were responding are like going to talk about the actual Texans from it. And I'm like, listen, no, that's not how you come after me, first of all. The only way you could come after me correctly if you're a Titans fan is if you sent like a picture of Tom Brady's last pass as a Patriot being a pick six against the Titans during a loss to the Titans. Like, that would work. Anything else? No, you have nothing. You have nothing against me. You traded him because you can't afford him. You traded him because you're a bunch of poors. Your franchise is poors.
Yet all of the other teams managed to extend and afford theirs.
Exactly. Exactly. And look, here's another one. Do research, bozo. Titans' new stadium is going to be the most expensive of all time. Okay, great.
Is that something to brag about?
Cool. Like, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, anyone can just make it something expensive.
Right.
Like, anyone can just spend money, especially when it's not going to be yours.
Right.
Yep.
Weird. Yeah, they love you. Big fans. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to be discussing the more on the Watson situation. More has been revealed within the last couple of minutes, including Sue L. Robinson releasing some of the reasons that she came to the conclusion that she did. Of course, we'll also have our garbage time segment first. Let me tell you about maybe the Titans Stadium is going to be expensive, but your home insurance does not have to be thanks to TGS Insurance. They have a new system. It shops over 3 dozen carriers, and you get a full quote within 15 seconds. And all you have to do, you guys, is send a single text. You don't even have to talk to an agent. So here's what you do. Get out your cell phone. Text the word money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Their system is going to ask for your home address, and you send that back, and you get that full quote within 15 seconds. This is a legit company. not a scam. Their online rating is almost perfect, and their average customer from last year saved over $870. Again, I know shopping for home insurance is probably not your favorite activity, but this is easy and it's going to save you cash. Text money to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, so Sue L. Robinson, the judge that recommended a six-game suspension for Deshaun Watson, is expected to release her full 16-page report for ESPN, but they have gotten the page just titled Conclusion, the last page of the report. We're going to read part of that to you because it is revealing. Robinson writes, "The NFL may be a forward-facing organization, but it is not necessarily a forward-looking one. Just as the NFL responded to violent conduct after a public outcry, so it seems the NFL is responding to yet another public outcry about Mr. Watson's conduct." It goes on a little bit, but then she ends with some bullet points. "I find the most appropriate landing place to be as follows. Watson is suspended for six games without pay. Although this is the most significant punishment ever imposed on an NFL player for allegations of nonviolent sexual conduct, Mr. Watson's pattern of conduct is more egregious than any before reviewed by the NFL. She then calls on him to only get massages from the team and says he can't have involvement with law enforcement.
Huh.
So it was really, really bad. More egregious than any before reviewed by the NFL, but he gets six games.
In a season where he's only going to get $1 million of salary.
Right.
So there's not much of a penalty here. And I mean, I'll say this again. I guess at this point, I mean, what are we really getting? Is this for us at this point, the proverbial pound of flesh? Yeah, justice or something like that. Because like, there's no justice. They didn't even face criminal charges. Everyone has settled outside of one person too. So is now the time to move on, I guess? It does make you feel pretty jaded and cynical that she can write, like, this is one of the worst things that she's seen in
that
quite
we've
some
ever
time.
Yet he gets six games.
And it's just six games in a season where he's barely making any money.
And she only heard, what, like five of the women? So she only heard a quarter of the bad things that he did.
Yeah. Yep.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
The
things
he's accused of.
I will say this.
Justice.
Not to be a contrarian, I do think one of the reasons that people want to read the report so closely is for future cases. I don't think that there will be another quarterback, hopefully never, accused of this many incidents and alleged involvement with sexual misconduct, but this is the first major case that Sue L. Robinson has handled. So I do think that if you're a reporter in the world, and especially if you're a Schefter, Pelissero, hell, if you're an NFL team owner, you want to know what this woman's mindset is. Is she going to be out for blood every time there's something like this? Is she going to be fair? What's the perception? She does rip the NFL apart in the first part of this conclusion where she says the NFL may be a forward-facing organization, but it is not necessarily a forward-looking one, at least in the former situation. The NFL is attempting to impose a more dramatic shift in its culture without the benefit of fair notice to and consistency of consequence for those in the NFL. So they're basically saying the NFL is trying to be more dramatic, but it's not giving guys fair notice that they're being more dramatic about policy. I mean, this woman's kind of all over the place. I understand that she is a lawyer and that this is lawyer speak.
She's arbitrating with herself.
She is. Yeah, it's like she goes back and forth.
Also, the fact that the NFL was too lenient in the past, now that means that Deshaun Watson's suspension is also lean, like that is a, in what it sounds like, that is a point in Watson's favor, is that, well, he didn't know that he was going to get suspended an entire year for this.
Yeah, I mean, it's like she's worried about perception. She's almost beating up on the NFL here, but then she's like, by the way, worst thing I've ever seen.
By the way, this is horrendous, but he didn't get a fair notice. He would have done it.
So, okay, so this is the conclusion, guys, of the 16-page report. Once the full 16-page report comes out, I do plan on reading it. I may need the help of some of my legal friends to read it, but I do plan on reading it. Yeah, yeah. As Michael Scott says, can you explain it to me like I'm in kindergarten? What do you guys think we're gonna see from that, if anything?
Nah, nothing. nothing matters. Nothing's real.
Okay. Well,
listen, I'm just from this perspective, Vanessa, I just can't help but say, just think to myself, like, okay, so this is all just a waste of time. Really?
Well,
right?
It's not a waste of time though, Paul, because although it's not legal and it's not criminal and it's not indictment and it's not a grand jury, it's the NFL. It's the sport that we cover.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm just saying, like, what kind of precedent does this set? Like, sure. they act like they care. They don't. They clearly don't. They never will. They never have. And we're all going to forget about this months from now. So it pisses me off from that perspective. Like, I know that any kind of punishment that Watson got for a lot of us right now, it is not doing anything for us, and it's not doing anything for the victims either. Like, the victims, they've all settled. They all want to move on with this. They just want this done. But it's pretty crazy that this is how it works. he faced no criminal charges and 6 games with no fine.
He gets traded like he wanted to before it came out. He gets to sit out, keep all of his money for a year.
He gets then to the team that he goes to,
by the
way.
Pick the team that he goes to, gets a unprecedented contract with over $200 million guaranteed, and now he gets suspended 6 games.
More of the report is coming out, and of course we'll study it more and read it tomorrow, but she does say it's undisputed that Watson's conduct does not fall into the category of violent conduct that would require the minimum 6-game suspension. I mean, this, it's very nuanced, very detailed.
Do you want to squeeze in a call before garbage time?
We have a call. Derek, what's up?
Derek is gone.
Did Derek
get out
hang
of here?
Up? Derek hung up. I
bet he had his phone down. But
Derek had thoughts on Kyler Murray.
Call back tomorrow, Derek. It'll be fine. All right, it's that time.
It's time. Let's play.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Wasn't there an issue with the men's Tour de France a couple of months ago? Like, somebody had their phone out and
there weren't enough steroids to go around for everybody.
Now,
I mean, blood doping. My bad. Doped blood.
Now, on July 29th, dozens of cyclists slammed into each other and hit the asphalt.
What kind of cyclists?
At the women's.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Vanessa.
I wondered why you put this on there. Now I know.
What kind of cyclists? Well, listen, I'm just reporting the news, and 30 female cyclists were involved in a massive pileup.
The crash was sparked when two women cyclists made contact on the right flank while a large cluster cruised on a right stretch. I am a horrific driver.
What a surprise.
So I would love to argue with you on this, but I actually can't because the amount of curbs that I've hit is obscene.
Okay. No cyclists?
No, I've not hit a cyclist, thank God. Then again, I don't plan on going on the Tour de France.
I didn't even know there was a ladies' Tour de France. So how much blood doping do they do?
Yeah, probably a lot.
I mean, would you... maybe this is sexist, but I mean, would you have to do more blood doping to be able to do that? It's a pretty demanding freaking event.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let them all dope.
Shout out to those ladies. Yeah, you know what? It would probably be more fun if they doped. What's his name? Lance doped for forever.
Lance doped, and so did the other guy. What, with Floyd Landis, right?
Do you remember when everybody wore the yellow Livestrong?
I do remember.
Was that because he... No, that's because he had cancer.
That's because he has cancer.
That's right.
Or had cancer.
He had the balls
in a weird way, him being a total piece of you-know-what actually did help the world.
That's true.
It did. If he didn't win all those Tour de Frances, we wouldn't, you know... be aware of testicular cancer.
I mean, he denied that for so long. One of many that dated Sheryl Crow, by the way.
Ooh,
I forgot about that.
I like Sheryl Crow.
Yeah. All right.
First kind of sleep. Is that her?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Good job. Chadwick Boseman, RIP, a great actor, gone way too soon due to cancer as well. From his Twitter account, his, I assume, staff, PR people, tweeted out the trailer for the new Wakanda Forever movie.
Yeah, it's the next Black Panther movie. I gotta say, it's pretty tone deaf. Hey, Chadwick Boseman's tweeting, and I did check his Twitter. So apparently, that account has been tweeting still, even though Chadwick Boseman has passed. But yeah, they just used his Twitter for the first tweet in a really long time, and it's like a movie trailer.
It's cringy to me.
USA.
That reminds me of when Herman Cain died, and then like a few weeks later. Whoever's running his account was like tweeting for people to like donate to like some campaign.
That's right.
Oh my God.
It's like weeks after he died.
Here's my thing with that.
We're shameless.
So like Bill Russell had a Twitter account. Bill Russell's Twitter account tweeted out that he passed away. Like, obviously, his people, maybe it was his wife, I don't know, but they logged on. I think that has to be your last tweet from that account, is the we are no longer here tweet. The exception to that is maybe you turn the Twitter account into Chadwick Boseman Incorporated or whatever.
Foundation.
Thank you, Foundation.
Okay.
But if it just says Chadwick Boseman, it, when I saw that tweet come across my timeline, I was like, wait, didn't he pass away?
Yeah. I saw that too, and I was just like, wait, this is just like, it's shameless, but it's so Disney.
It is.
Oh, he's dead. Let's use his account. Everyone will say it's such a great moment, and of course it wasn't.
Like, if in 6 months Bill Russell is tweeting about civil rights, I'm going to be concerned because he's dead.
Or is just like, buy Celtics season tickets
right
now.
But if it's the Bill Russell Foundation, I can take that. So you got to change, after the death tweet, change the name of the Twitter account.
I do want, if I die early, I want Josh Beard to take over my Twitter and to just tweet the most outlandish, cancelable stuff until my account gets banned.
Right.
You could just schedule.
Just impersonate me.
You could just schedule your tweets.
But yeah, like, but I'd have to kill myself.
You can schedule it for like years in advance, can't you?
I guess.
Yeah, like 80 years from now. Happy Monday, y'all. Let's do brunch. That'd be false.
I'll just like tweet like 90 years from now. Titans fans, you're still idiots and have no brain cells. Die.
Big day in the sports world. Of course, we're going to continue to have Deshaun Watson coverage throughout the day. The Killer Bees, Jeremy Branham and Joel Blank are up next. Have a good day, guys.
Peace.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Hall of Fame Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.